during the defendant's conduct too. How a reasonable person, sometimes they say an ordinary person, what would an ordinary or reasonable person do, right? So there's a difference. What other difference? So I think it was one you were going to. What kind of evidentiary difference does it make if we use a professional standard versus a reasonable care standard? Yeah?
For a professional standard, you're not allowed to ask the jury to use their own senses. You have to rely only on expert testimony.
Okay, so that's pretty good, right? So in an ordinary care situation, who decides what an ordinary person would do? Based on what? Their personal knowledge, right? They just say, well, I think an ordinary person would go. They'd like lift or higher, right? That's an ordinary person stand, right? I think a reasonable... So the jury gets to say what they think a reasonable person would do in those circumstances. Do they get to do that if we're instructing on the professional standard? We think a reasonable doctor would have done this. Do they get to say that? No. Instead, they have to use expert testimony. Now, the court on appeal has a little glib. You can actually use expert testimony or what? Did anyone find this? It's a little glib. The trial court says you have to use expert testimony. The court of appeal said, well, actually, you have to have proof of what an expert would do. So you can actually use live testimony. Or you could use some other evidence of the professional standards. So for instance, you could introduce a professional textbook that says, doctors must always, step one, wash the wound, right? So you can do it through expert testimony, which is what 99% of the cases do, but technically you just need some evidence of what the professional standard is. Can the jury decide for themselves? Answer, no. Right, so see the difference between the two standards? Okay, are we good? Why is this plaintiff complaining? After all, this plaintiff did put on expert testimony, right? Did you ever see that? Both it was a classic case of dueling experts, right?
Oh, my expert says, oh, yes, it's reasonable care. The other expert goes,
oh, my God, can you believe they did this? Right, so we actually had competing expert testimony, so why is the plaintiff testified to? Whereas if they're instructed on the ordinary care standard, they might say, well, yeah, I know the expert said that, but I think it's not reasonable care to have a pink blanket instead of a blue blanket or something, right? So that you, when you use the professional standard, you cabin what the jury can do. So even though the plaintiff put in their expert testimony, the jury was still forced into picking either plaintiff's expert or defendant's expert. They couldn't themselves assess. Everybody good? Okay. When do we use the professional standard? So why does the trial court think we should use the professional standard here, that the appellate court says, no, we should not use the professional standard? So why is it, how are we going to pick when we use the professional versus ordinary care? Yes?
Because the skills or what they were doing was not something that needed extensive training for. It wasn't a purely medical function that they were doing. It was just a care to the person. It wasn't like they were administering a drug or something.
So she says one of the things I want to look at is what skills they were doing, what proficiency they had, and here it was only personal care. What else does the court say we should look at? They actually go off statutory language, so they think the legislature told them to use reasonable care. Why? told us to use reasonable care when it said adequate care, so therefore we'll use reasonable care. And then the second thing they do, they test to see whether this is really a profession. So see on the bottom of 145 where they test to see if it's a profession? Okay, can we get the complete test of how you would know a profession? Like juggling, profession, no profession. Archer, profession, not profession. So we need some way, dentist, profession, not profession. Hairdresser, profession, not profession. We need something that tells us. What's the test? Yep.
It says a person who belongs to a learned profession or whose occupation requires a high level of training in profession.
Okay, so we need a list of learned professions. Who do you think that is?
Lawyers.
Lawyers and doctors. So when they say the learned professions, we mean us. We're learned and doctors, okay? Or if they don't fit in one of those traditional categories, what do we have to show?
That they receive training.
Well, what was it? It wasn't just training. It was the highest level, levels of two things. Training and proficiency. So we look at how much training they have, and then we look at proficiency, i.e. their skill level, right? So you already gave me their skill level, right? They're just washing people. It is not brain surgery. It's not writing your first verbal for law school, right? It's really not that hard, okay? So first we look at proficiency or skill. What's the skill requirement? What's the other thing we look at? Training, right? So what do we know about their training? Yeah, Ms. Marsh, what do we know about their training?
Minimal requirements.
Minimal requirements, such as how many hours?
120 hours.
Right, 120 hours, a good 2 weeks for you guys, right? So their total work is 120 hours, right? And they don't need a high school diploma, okay? So we're pretty sure they have a low level of training, and the skills required are pretty low, so they're not a profession. Good? So you have to be able to run this test because you have to send the case on the right track. Send it on the professional standard track or send it on the ordinary care track. Everybody good? You could recognize the tracks? Okay, some years classes broke out into fights about hairdressers. I don't know why. And people said things that, like, but let me just tell you, no. Hairdressing, cute, but it is not the right level of professional standard.
You have to go to beauty school, and you have to go to...
See, there it is. Beauty school! You have to do, it's really like law school!
Hey, you can have beauty school dropouts.
They have as much as they
need. It's stressful.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, I know.
They put the hours in.
Okay, any, see, there it is. Any more?
How many hours?
You know, our license. Professional level of care. Okay? Okay. Let's look at one of my... Anybody got any other cases out of Myers? You can wave at me. Wave, wave. I don't have a question, but my study group thought. Okay, let's look at Evans, Martin versus Evans, and this is one of my favorite ever cases. Just because it's so... You completely understand what happened. So, I need a volunteer from the back row to tell me what happened in Martin versus Evans. The short version. Oh, yes, Mr. Johnson.
Evans has a semi, go up parking it, and he's going to use the rest stop, use the restroom, he comes out, walks in the semi, looks at it, sees what's back there, continues to put it in reverse, backs up and pins Bart between his semi trailer and then the truck.
And what does the jury do? They're always pro plaintiff. So what's the jury do? Jerry?
After looking at question 1A, they all agree with it and they give for the defendant.
They defend it! Right, ever remember this image that juries are pro plaintiff? After cases that go to trial, which is ordinance, it's 50-50. Right? And they're like, no, obviously you did anything wrong. Okay. him is going to happen?
Sorry,
what's going to happen next?
Maybe they get a new trial.
A new trial, right. So he says, nope, you got it wrong. New jury, new trial, because you couldn't. It shocks the conscience of the court that you found this defendant was not negligent. Okay, so what standard of care are we using in the case? Standard of care.
Ordinary
care. So let's look again at the ordinary care, just because there's actually law here. So can anyone, it's long, we don't need it to be that long. So can anyone shorten to me for me and say, when we talk about ordinary care or the general standard of care, what do we mean? Because I'm not right now, all of 149 is a rule statement. Right? We're going to have to work on that, right? It's just way too long.
I would say the care of a reasonably careful person would use under the circumstances presented in the case.
Care of a reasonable person under the circumstances presented in the case. That's cool. I don't want to say something other than reasonable person. For the course. Ordinary. How about any other one pick out an older word for the reasonable person? Prudent, right? They all mean the same thing, right? So sometimes you'll see, oh my goodness, the reasonable person, the ordinary person, the reasonably prudent person, the ordinarily prudent person, right? They used to say man all the time because they were clueless, right? But so you need something about reasonable person. What was the second part of your formula?
Under the circumstances presented.
She said under the circumstances of the case. Did anyone see a different ending to the phrase? Under what circumstances?
Well, and the deviation proximate cause of the actual harm.
So what's that?
That's
deviation caused harm.
That's causation.
Big that. Good. That's not my element, but good. Okay, so instead of under the circumstances, courts sometimes say what? Okay, hold that. That's a little wrinkly, wrinkly. Okay, I just want other versions of under the circumstances. Because
under similar circumstances.
Under similar circumstances, under the same circumstances, under the same and similar, right? Okay, so that all means the same thing, right? Reasonable person in the circumstances. And you'll see different flavors of that. Good? So that's simply the ordinary care standard. What would a reasonably careful person do in the circumstances? Okay, there are a couple of little wrinkles in the instructions that I just want to pull out and we'll come back to them. So if you look at the end of it, it actually says you should reasonable care to avoid injury, right? You should use ordinary care not only for his own safety and the protection of his property, but to avoid injury to others. So who's under an obligation to use reasonable care? And who will we call everyone? Who are the two main people in a case? There you go. So the plaintiff's duty is to use reasonable care for others. What's the plaintiff's duty? That's the illustration of what? Reasonable care for who? For their own safety, right? Everybody see it? So the defendant, we're usually saying, did you take reasonable care in the circumstances to others, right? And the plaintiff, we're saying, did you take reasonable care for your own safety? Where are we going to put those two concepts? So where is reasonable care obligation of the defendant? Where's the question where the defendant took reasonable care? So they're going to go in radically different places if you think about the structure of a lawsuit. So where does whether the defendant exercised reasonable care go?
That would be the prosecution's part.
That's good, but that was a blunt word. In torts we say, plaintiff's prima facie case, right? So plaintiff's prima facie case is going to depend on showing whether the defendant took reasonable care. Where are we going to put whether the plaintiff took reasonable care for their own safety?
Comparative negligence defense.
It's going to be the main defense to negligence, right? So we're going to have, okay, it's true, defendant was negligent, but you skipped in front of his truck. Therefore, we have a defense see it? So when you read cases going ahead, some of them will actually be cases asking whether the plaintiff took reasonable care, which would be the main defense of comparative fault, right? Or whether the defendant took reasonable care for others, which is part of the prima facie case. Everybody see it? Okay, so that's one little hidden gem. The other little hidden gem was that dangerous thing. Who had that? See right at the end of that little quote on 149? The amount of care required by law must be in keeping with the degree of danger involved. What on earth does that mean? Now I'm going to call on you for the rest of the class. I'm bugging other people. Anyone wants to tell me what they think that means? Suppose you're backing up a bicycle. Yeah?
Maybe you take more care if there's more risks involved with the activities that you're performing. So if you're doing something like riding your bike, there's less chance that you're going to hurt someone if you hit them with it. But if you're driving a giant truck, there's more risk of injuring someone.
Right. Now, do you think that's different than reasonable care under circumstances?
No.
No. It's just illustrating the reasonable care under circumstances principle, right? The more dangerous the activity you're engaged in, the more care you could take, right? If I am tossing a pencil, a marker around, I get one level of care. If this was a very sharp sword, no Gillis, more care. Right, so it's simply an illustration of the reasonable care standard. Okay, there's one other quaint phrase, which is on 148 to 149, which I asked you to actually look at, which is that statement, the mere occurrence of an accident does not establish negligent conduct. Rather, plaintiff has the burden of establishing by the preponderance of the evidence that the defendant engaged in conduct that deviated from the general standard of care. So what's this idea that the mere happening of an accident, what do they mean? Yeah?
I think it goes back to your point where if people hear an accident, they automatically assume someone's at fault and it's usually the person that caused it. So they're just trying to say that just because an accident caused it and started doesn't mean that the plaintiff wasn't also negligent or didn't bring about the accident. Also, that you have to still prove that you can't just assume that the defendant was the one necessarily injured.
So was Mr. Martin injured in this case?
Yeah.
Does that show us that the defendant was negligent?
Not necessarily.
No. So everybody see what they're saying? The mere fact you've got blood on the floor or squash bits in the parking lot does not mean someone was negligent. Accidents, meaning fault-free occurrences, do happen. Right? So everybody see that general rule? The mere fact that injury has occurred, that's what they mean by accident. The mere fact that injury has occurred does not mean you can presume that someone acted without reasonable care. You can't presume breach. Now, we will, in about 2 weeks, completely contradict that principle. And you will have forgotten it by then, but we will, okay? Any other questions on the ordinary care standard? It's a pretty straightforward standard. We'll mess it up a little bit tomorrow, because that's what law school is. Okay. Let's go back to the facts here. Okay, remember the accident, ad nauseum, they go on and on and on. Okay, the trial judge reverses the jury. And then the Court of Appeals reverses the trial judge. Why does the Court of Appeals think the trial judge did something wrong? So what was it that the trial judge did to get the trial judge overturned?
The trial judge took it upon himself to
So who gets to decide breach? Who gets to decide what the standard is, i.e. what the duty, what the standard is? Reasonable care professional. Whose job is that? Okay. So reading this case, it looks as if what the judge did wrong was stepped into the jury's job. Let's focus. What is the jury's job? So why do you think the judge disagreed with the jury? What decisions do you think the jury had made?
He said that if they didn't support the facts.
So what's that decision? So one thing, what's the jury doing when it hears all the evidence?
You determine whether evidence exercises ordinary care. It's basically the credibility determination.
So one thing the jury does is credibility. What's that decision?
Determining who's telling the truth.
Right. for instance, right here, what do they have to decide?
Which version of the facts?
Right, right. Was Evans always, was a totally clear space, or had Martin pulled his truck in, right? They have to decide, oh yeah, the guy's a loser, oh yeah, I believe him, right? That's, and in order to decide breach, they have to decide credibility, because they have to work out crucially what? To define, defend, or breach, you have to know what? The facts, what the defendant did, right? You're like, that's what defendant did. Everybody see that? Okay. That, now, one way to read the reversal is the Court of Appeal said to the trial judge, you know, trial judge, it's the jury's job to decide what happens. It's the jury's job to decide credibility. Okay, you've been in law school for like 6 weeks. You're like, yeah, I know that. How could the judge get that wrong? Right? It seems incredible that the judge would go, oh no, I think I'm supposed to decide credibility, right? That's just not so, you see? That's what the court focuses on, but I just don't think it's credible, right? That the judge forgot it was the jury's job to decide credibility. I think the second problem, the other problem, is what's the jury's second job? Was their job just to decide what Mr. Evans and Mr. Martin did? Or when they decide breach, does the jury actually have a second job? You already know the answer to this. You just aren't thinking. So you can look at, do you find it? Look at the text. So if you look at the text on 151, look at that last paragraph, the last full paragraph. A resolution of whether Evans was negligent, did Evans breach, depends on the jury finding two things.
Ordinary care.
What about ordinary care?
It's their opinion of it.
It's their opinion of what constitutes reasonable care. Right? What a person exercising reasonable care would do is the jury's job. So the jury just doesn't decide what happens. They also have to say, well, a reasonable person would do X. Right? Or a reasonable person wouldn't do X. So the jury's job is twofold. Credibility and deciding what a reasonable person would do. Now, where have we seen this before? Not 5 seconds ago. When we contrasted the professional and the ordinary care standard. What did we say about professional versus ordinary care?
We saw it in the case.
So if they get instruction on professional care, what does the jury do? Yep. They pick between the experts. So if you're in a professional standard, when you get into that second job, they just have to say, well, expert this said this, and expert this said this. They can't make up their own, we think a professional would do this. But in an ordinary care standard, what can they do? Based on that personal information, they can say, we think a reasonable person would behave like this. So everybody see the jury's doing two jobs. They're saying what happened, but they're also making up what a reasonable person would do in the circumstances. Yep?
I'm just wondering, is that why in some certain circumstances, such as like med mal cases, certain sides will, maybe within like 150 mile radius, is one good expert, certain sides will pay that expert to keep him on retainer but not use him at the stand?
Because in professional cases, you have to get that expert in. If you don't get an expert, you lose the case. You have to have an expert. Yep.
What happens if there is, like in this case, if there had been a doctor on, like a doctor who specializes in nursing home care on the jury, would they be allowed?
No. What role are they playing? Expert or juror? Juror. They have to, it says you cannot use it. Okay, so let's go back to this, because I think this is what the truck judge gets wrong. It's not that he thinks he's allowed to decide this. He thinks he's allowed to decide this. So in the jury's view, or the judge's view, what would reasonable care require? So what do you think the judge thought reasonable care would require? He's like, Evans was negligent because reasonable care, a reasonable person would have done X.
Get back out of the truck, check around the outside of it to make sure
that... Why would he do that?
Because he's sitting here for like a couple minutes.
What else? Come on.
It's crooked.
It's crooked, though.
So he can't see.
He can't see. What? The judge is like, no reasonable person backs up a truck when they can't see. Right? So he says, that's why I know the jury got it wrong. Not because I don't agree with the facts, but because I think when you assess what a reasonable person would do, you say a reasonable person would get out and check before they backed up when they couldn't see and they spent 2 minutes. Okay. What does the jury think a reasonable person would do? Because it's the jury's job. So can you say the jury looked at this and said, no, a reasonable person in these circumstances didn't breach because they would have... Yep.
Done exactly what he did.
What exactly did he do? So this is a follow-up question.
He checked. He knew that there was no... He checked before he got in. He checked when he got in. And after. Like, there was no one there when he first got in the truck.
He checked, there's no one there. You're like, yeah, but what about that 2 minutes doing the homework? Yeah? So what else did he do? He must have done more.
He put on his four-ways and let out the engine brake, which he assessed.
And he backed out of his very slow pace.
And he backed out of his very slow pace. So do you think that's what a reasonable person would do? Yeah. And who gets to decide that? The judge or the jury? Jury. So I think that's where the trial judge goes wrong. It's not that he thinks he can decide credibility, it's that he thinks he gets to pick the standard for a reasonable person would do, and he's wrong. It's the jury's job to work out what a reasonable person would do and compare the defendant's conduct to that. Got it?
I'm just confused why he was allowed to do that then.
He's not, so he gets reversed.
Okay, so it right. Just stands like that until it goes to appeal.
Correct.
Okay.
So like if I make an error, you can go talk to the dean, that kind of thing. Okay. Not that if I make an error, but if it, theoretically, if it happens, yes. Yeah.
It's going to be on topic, but is a judge even allowed to do that constitutionally? Is he allowed to just say, I disagree and just have it? Isn't there like a double jeopardy
It's not double jeopardy because that would be two different judgments. So you're correct that there's an allocation of authority between the judge and the jury in the Constitution, but it turns actually on common law, and traditionally at common law there are circumstances where a judge can take a case from jury. So next semester in that awesome class on civil procedure, you will see why it's okay for the judge to take, on certain standards, to take a case from a jury. But what we're just trying to learn is what's the jury's job. Yeah, it has to be really quick because we have to play cards.
Right. Doesn't it have to be that no reasonable jury would be able to find?
That's one of the standards. Yes. Okay, let us go play cards. Your group needs 3 cards, and you can be little cute groups. You can have friends. Have we learned a roll yet? Wait, Gilles didn't hold us a roll card, so how do we know if we learned a roll yet? I don't know. Have you learned a roll yet?
I don't know.
I'm confused. Yeah. Oh, Mr. Bimner thinks we learned a roll. What roll have we learned?
I don't know if I really want to say that, but I took it as there's two different standards, one for professional care and one for ordinary care.
We learned that already. We have indeed. You need, in a group, you need 3 cards. You can have as many people in your group as you pathetically need. You need 3 cards in your group. Say we're going to play with a Jones card. You need 3 cards in your group because you need 1 of each. Anyone else need no cards?
This row is.
That row is one pathetic group. Okay, you want to just change on the cards? Change on the cards? Good? It's not that hard so far. Okay. is which. So anyone want to tell me what they wrote down as the key fact for Pingaro? Dog bite. Dog bite. Okay, so remember which case it is. Okay. Jones.
Bus.
Bus. Campbell.
Mower.
Okay. That was so hard so far. Okay, now we have to try and work out who actually won, lost at the trial level and the appeals level. Okay, so dog bite. We'll take the winner. Who won? Plaintiff. And who wins on appeal?
Plaintiff.
Okay, bus case. New trial. So plaintiff manages to get a new trial. How about Campbell? Okay. Now what I need to know is what you think the standard of care was. So what was the duty? So jury instructions work like your card, right? The judge hands a card to the jury and says, when you're working out breach, here's the standard. So, what was the standard in Pingaro?
Strict liability.
Strict liability. Jones.
Highest
degree. Anyone pick anything else?
Special relationship.
Yeah. Special relationship is what gives you it. It's not the standard. So the standard is the highest or extraordinary. Good. And what about Campbell? Ordinary care, the care of a reasonable person. Okay, everybody should have their cards. Did everybody have any fight about getting those cards? They're all good? It's extraordinary or highest. Either one, it means the same thing. The highest level of care or extraordinary care. Okay, here's what you have to do. You have to arrange them from the standard that requires the greatest care from defendant to the one that requires the lowest care from defendant. So which order are you putting your cases? Does it go Pingaro, Jones, Campbell? Jones, Pingaro, Campbell?
No care.
So that's what you're debating. Which is a Campbell. Okay. Everyone get a different order? Yes.
Yeah.
those care, you're still liable for the bite, whatever the reasonable steps you take are.
Everyone get a different order? A box the debate. Where does strict liability go? Okay, so you put it as the lowest because...
Doesn't matter.
I just said it doesn't
matter. You're still liable.
Okay, and those who thought it was the highest said...
Well, because there's no forgiveness of it, you should be extremely careful.
Yep, no, right away.
Or why it's not.
Like if you have a dog that bites...
This is the required amount. It's infinity.
Okay, guys. Excellent. That's the point. Strict liability is really weird. And you're going to study it next semester. Okay? But notice that you can put it either place and be absolutely correct. Absolutely correct either place. The goal, the law's intent is that you take a lot of care, but you can say, shucks, I'm paying, and that's will be a reprobate. Okay? So, you'll look at strict liability next semester. What I want to do is add in a few other standards of care we know.
You're like, we don't know any others.
Well, then you're ignorant. You're ignorant. Coming out of duty, right? So, duty tells you, do you owe a duty? And if so, what standard of care? So, does anyone know a standard of care that's not on the board? Professional. So where do you think, does professional the same as this, or is it different?
I'd say it's the same as highest. Well, actually, no, higher than, it's a little bit higher than highest degree.
Okay, go back and look at it and see what it says.
It's the highest degree of practicable care.
That's not what it says in the book.
Not in this case, but in another case.
Oh, in the pharmacy case, yeah, but they weren't, so what does it say? Does it say the care? A super special professional, or what kind of professional? It says, ordinary reasonable professional. So it's an everyday thing, it's an ordinary care standard, but we measure it differently. So it's actually simply a parallel universe. You know Star Trek? Right? This is a professional standard over here. Right? It's pitched at ordinary care level, but we're going to measure it by a professional and we're going to use expert testimony. Right? So it's pitched about the same as ordinary care, but it has its own little universe. Now, what I'd advise you to do in outlining is keep shoving all the little professional crap right to the back. Right? Because it's its own little world. So you'll pick up, oh look, here's a little note on professional, and you're like, oh, shove it into professional world. Because then you'll have a complete analysis of professional, right? Rather than having it sprinkled throughout your regular discussion. Okay? Because it's a parallel universe. Awesome. Okay, so what else do we have? There's another standard.
I don't know. What have we done? Landowners.
Duty to protect, what? So, duty to protect, when you rescue, you have to use what? Ordinary care! So, once you've solved there's a duty to rescue, you're going to ping into ordinary care. Excellent. How about landowners?
Duty to warn.
Duty to warn, okay. Ordinary care, yep. How about those little licensees? Not to W&W. Where does that go? Alright, so W&W is sitting down here. Right? It's a much lower standard of care. You just have to not willfully or wantonly injure them. You don't owe them reasonable care. See it? So these are like instructions coming from the judge telling the jury how to assess the defendant's conduct. Does it matter what card the jury gets handed, what instruction the jury gets handed? So let's try one. Campbell. The jury is instructed an ordinary care card, and they say they don't actually get to see it, right? Because the judge says no breach. Suppose you did the Mower case on extraordinary care. Do you think there's a breach? Remember the Mower case? And the judge says, no, summary judgment. No jury could find that he didn't exercise ordinary care. Suppose we applied extraordinary care to care may be required that he didn't do. Where are my lawnmower people? I usually have a professional mower guy. Really? You were a professional mower guy?
I did lawn care for like 3 years.
Okay, and what did you have to do?
You have to bag them. You have to bag the clippings so they can shooting out the side.
Do it without people?
You have to get out and visibly walk the ground before you mow. Most mowing companies require their people to visibly walk the road to make sure there's nothing on it. What else did they want them to do? If anyone was within 75 feet, stop mowing. That's extraordinary care, right? And he didn't do that. So see how the standard gives you a different result. Okay, let's try a different one. How about the bus dude? Right? The bus dude, would it make a difference between whether you gave the jury ordinary care or extraordinary care? So what do you think ordinary care required the bus driver to do? And what do you think extraordinary care required the bus driver to do? Anyone driven a school bus? You've ridden them. What does the school bus driver do?
They don't get in accidents and don't drive around.
Stop looking, listen. The facts in this case. They can't move until the kid's sitting down. Okay, so see the difference? If we run ordinary care in Jones, he probably took ordinary care, right? Because he starts to move, the guy's already on the bus, he's walking back, ordinary care. If we apply extraordinary care, we say, no, you have to wait till the guy sits in his seat before you stop. Let's try one more. How about Pingaro? Suppose there wasn't strict liability for dog bites. Suppose it simply went on an ordinary care standard. Do you think this breach? Because what did he do? Sign, gate, the deal with the meter readers. So notice what level the jury is told to apply depends whether you can find breach. All we have left to do, you good? Everybody see it? That's the lesson of those cases. The standard matters. Okay, let's look at our beloved Just Cardozo. You know it's Cardozo because you can't understand what he's saying, but it sounds really good, right? Okay, so we're way back on 151. Oh no, we're further back than that, I'm sorry. 155, thank you. Adams versus Book. And I drew a little picture because people have a hard time seeing this. Right, so the defendant runs a trolley company and they get their power from these overhead wires. And the little plaintiff skips across the bridge, but unfortunately is trailing a 8-foot piece of wire, so he touches the wires and is electrocuted. See it? Okay, that's what 12-year-olds do. Okay. Was it the plaintiff? The jury finds for the plaintiff and Cardozo, friend of the people, reverses. Okay, so the first thing I ask you to do is try and work out what the breaches were. So how are we going to allege that the defendant breached? What did they do wrong?
They didn't maintain the fences.
How? Why? So what else could they have done? So notice when you're doing breach, you have to kind of, as a lawyer, as a plaintiff's lawyer, say, that was the bonus question. Plaintiff's lawyers come up with a breach. Plaintiff's lawyers say, you should have done this. So, yeah?
Is contingency, they could have foresaw that maybe could have happened?
So, they could have foresaw, it's not actually that thing, so hold that thing. Let's do, what do you think the breach is? So, if you were going to try this, you're representing the electrocuted kid's family. You're looking for a breach. You look at the, what could you say they should have done differently? Don't get any ideas? Bury the wires! Bury the wires! What does Cardozo say to that? Is that the custom in the industry? No. He says, you can't expect them to bury the wires. That's not customary in the industry. They have a permit to do overhead wires. Okay, anyone got a different theory? Yep.
Insulation.
Insulate the wires! Then the kid's fine! Okay, what's the problem with that one?
Well,
which I'm going to try to the jury. Okay, so what kind of theory do they have? So how else would you argue it?
Cover the top of the wire or anything that's for sealed.
So the top of the wire is too close to the people?
There's a bridge that goes on top of this part.
Right, so there's a bridge right here, so you're much closer to the wires. So that's the problem. The problem right here is, look, you have the wires, and they're much closer to people than anywhere else on the roof. And the guy gets electrocuted. What's wrong with that breach? This is your theory back there.
You still want to do it, or you want faster?
What's wrong with that being a breach? That, hey, look, the kid, the wires were right under the bridge. Foreseen that could ever have happened? And why not? What made it so unforeseeable? Yeah?
The distance between the wire and the bridge, like you lean over and not get close at all, it's too far from where you're personally.
Right, it's 8 foot down. But couldn't you foresee that maybe, couldn't it happen that someone would get injured? So the kid's negligent, but does that mean they're not? So why is he so sure that that can't be a breach? Okay, try again. It's reasonable care in light of what?
What Cardozo said, there's no way they can see that extraordinary peril.
So you have to take reasonable care in light of... You don't have to take account of extraordinary perils. You don't have to be a psychic. So when we say, did a person exercise reasonable care, we're saying reasonable care in light of foreseeable risks. So notice reasonable care is always tied to some foreseeable risk. You don't have to walk around going, oh my goodness, right? There has to be a foreseeable risk. So we always say, did you take reasonable care in light of some foreseeable risk? And if there's really no risk at all, you can't be negligent. If there's no reasonably foreseeable risk, you can't be negligent. Yep? You could try it, it's the same fact that Mr. Stoltman brought out. It's an 8 foot tall. So it's really hard to say that 8 foot is not okay. Okay, the last one is the last Cardozo quote before you go. Cardozo ends by saying, if we imposed liability here, it would be like being an insurer. And I don't worked out what that meant.
I mean, I did a guess.
Guess is always good.
I said they did all they could possibly do, and that sometimes accidents happen that are completely unforeseen. And that's exactly why we have insurance.
So it was good except for last bit. So he's saying they took every possible care, right? He said to impose liability here would make them like an insurer. When do insurance companies have to pay? When there's an accident. Do you always have to pay in tort law when there's an accident? What standard of care makes you pay even if you're innocent? Strict liability. So that's what he's saying. He's saying that if you impose liability here, you'd be using a strict liability standard. You'd be making them pay even though they did nothing wrong. And that's not the standard we're supposed to be using here. So that's what he means by insurer. He goes, you can't point to any lack of reasonable care given foreseeable risks. Go your lovely ways. Finish your glorious memos. And come back tomorrow, brain dead, but ready for tour. I may post a little checklist for you to do in the hope that you'll work on it at lunchtime.